The Will Cain Show podcast is presented by the Capital One Saver Card. Earn 4% cash back on dining and entertainment, 2% at grocery stores, and 1% on all other purchases.
This is the Will Cain Podcast on ESPN Radio.
You know, one of the great unnoticed worries, untalked about problems in bringing sports back is not the athletes who are among the healthiest and most capable of dealing with a potential coronavirus infection people in our society. But on that same sideline, sitting on that same bench in some sports, are people who I believe meet the legal definition of elderly. Some of the most vulnerable people in the sports world that need to be considered when we come back from the coronavirus is, what about coaches? It's the Will Cain Show on ESPN Radio, the ESPN app, SiriusXM Channel 80, and on ESPN News, presented by Progressive Insurance. And all guests are at 888-729-3776 on the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line. Coming up in this hour, we'll talk to ESPN Major League Baseball insider Jeff Passan about the numbers that are keeping baseball from coming back in 2020. And everybody seems to give lip service to, it can't just be words, this time it has to be action for improvement in our society. I find that odd when we crucify a man of action in Drew Brees, and I find it odd that we ignore the action of improvements currently taking place in our society. I'll explain that coming up a little bit later here on the Will Cain Show. But missing basketball? Tune in tomorrow night for an NBA Classic. Game 6 of the 2013 NBA Finals between the Heat and Spurs, presented by Home Depot. Coverage begins at 8 p.m. Eastern Time on ESPN Radio and the ESPN app. Coaches, not all, but many, are in the most vulnerable population when it comes to coronavirus infections. And as the NBA prepares to come back at Walt Disney World in Orlando, Florida, perhaps as soon as late July, NBA Commissioner Adam Silver on NBA on TNT talked about what coaches are going to have to do to protect themselves when they hit the court.
But there are also people involved in this league, particularly some of the coaches who are obviously older people. And we also know people at any age who have underlying conditions are more vulnerable. So we're going to have to work through protocols. And it may be, for example, certain coaches may not be able to be the bench coach. They may have to retain social distancing protocols, and maybe they can be in the front of a room, a locker room or a ballroom with a whiteboard, but when it comes to actual play, we're not going to want them that close to players in order to protect them. So those are all issues we're continuing to work through.
Some of the oldest coaches in the NBA include Greg Popovich, who's in his 70s, Alvin Gentry, and Rick Carlisle, who is 60 years old. Adam Silver's right, at least from an actuarial standpoint. The coronavirus effect is very little for young, healthy people in this society. This was a major topic as recently as 2 weeks ago. It still is absolutely stunning how it has been shoved to the back burner, and you'd be forgiven, I hope I am, if a little bit of well-learned cynicism is now part of the calculus when it comes to the threat that is coronavirus. If it was such a big deal, it shouldn't have been so easy to shove aside when a different news item took over the front page. That being said, the statistics do show that those in the vulnerable population, older people, and those with pre-existing conditions or underlying conditions, health issues, are the ones who are most vulnerable to a serious coronavirus infection. And at least part of that definition of a vulnerable group fits a lot of NBA coaches. But Dallas Mavericks head coach Rick Carlisle doesn't like that. He made the point to Silver and others that, you know, you could be 60 years old and healthier physically than a 30-year-old. And he's right. Things have to be individualized. Right now, where I'm staying in Tennessee, I've played tennis a few times with a guy who's 82 years old, and I have to tell you, he and his wife, who's in her 70s, are absolutely the most impressive picture of health. And yes, they are beating me and my wife in tennis. Yes, I am losing to a septuagenarian and an octogenarian. I'd like to say that's a testament to their athleticism and health and not my poor play of tennis. But it could go either way on that. The point is, there are varying degrees of health, no matter your age. So Rick Carlo doesn't like the idea that just because he's 60, he might not get to be on the sidelines, and he's taken that issue up. Whether or not he will get to participate from courtside for the return of the NBA, ESPN NBA insider Adrian Wojnarowski said they'll all coaches be participating with masks. Listen.
Yeah, Mike D'Antoni, Alvin Gentry, two coaches, 65 years old, 69 years old. Greg Popovich is 71. You know, Adam Silver has said publicly, and the league has talked privately, you know, about some possible accommodations for these coaches. There's been talks of the older coaches wearing masks. Adam Silver even brought up the idea that those coaches in that more vulnerable ages for the coronavirus might not be on the bench. Rick Carlisle, the head of the Players Association, called Adam Silver last night. Adam Silver told him, hey, maybe I jumped the gun on this. But the Coaches Association and those coaches are very sensitive to the idea that they may be singled out. And essentially, if those coaches would have to wear masks, you know, I think the Coaches Association would want everyone to wear masks.
So they might be back, but they will be wearing masks. I've got a few more movies when it comes to school movies. Some good recommendations have come in over the Twitter line. That's at Will Kane on Twitter. Before I share with you some serious oversights on the big board when it comes to school movies, let's go to Rick in Kentucky. What's up, Rick? You're on the Will Kane Show.
Hey, Will. I just wanted to say...
Nope. You took... Pat, you want to sort that one out yourself? Hello?
Hello?
Yeah.
I potted Rick, up the wrong Rick, sorry.
I know what you did. I know what you did.
Yeah.
That's why I said very specifically, Rick in Kentucky.
Yeah, there are too many Ricks.
Yeah. Not that kind of Rick. Literally men named Rick. Sorry, Rick in Kentucky. I was trying to take you. Pat put on another guy first named Rick.
Okay.
But you're on. Am Rick I off? In Kentucky.
Okay.
Yes,
all right.
You are.
Thanks for taking my call. Thanks for taking my call. I wanted to call you probably last time I'm going to have a chance to talk to you. And right. I just wanted to congratulate you on your new job.
I'm not, yeah.
Let me, okay. But, I had a really, really, really good laugh over that. I thought about it and I said, wow, there's gotta be a God. That is perfect.
Rick. All right, listen, man, I'm not talking okay, about that right now.
I'm not talking about that right now.
And it has nothing to do with what I want to talk about things, about my future right now. I'm just not talking about that right now. If you have a substantive point on what we're talking about today, like I have in the past, I'm interested in what you have to say.
I'll talk about what you want to talk about. The bottom line is that the two guys you talked to earlier hit you on the head with a hammer, pegged you perfectly the way I look at you. I look at you, Will, like you said, the argument thing, you like to argue. You want your point of view out there. Fine. That's great. I told you before, I'm a veteran. I raised my hand, served the country. You know, I did that so you could have your point of view and I could kneel for the flag. Okay. But the bottom line is you talk about symbolism. The president just gassed and rubber bullet people, pushed him out of the way so he could go stand in front of a church with a Bible in his hand, okay? That's his prerogative, too. The bottom line is we are American, all of us, okay? We got a right to believe what we want to believe. That's what you call freedom, all right? If I could get Will Smith to give me three wishes, two of them would be that you could wake up moco colored with a fade and an earring in your ear, and the president of the United States would be chocolate with a shaved head and experience what black life is about.
What would the
third be? The third would be the wish for you, be water. Okay?
That's your three wishes? If you had a genie bottle, you'd wish for me and President Trump to be black, and I couldn't even figure out what your third wish was. That's how you'd use them?
I already got enough money. It's America, Will. It's America. We're trying to do better, baby.
Yeah, I know, but if a, you know.
I got enough money.
What? I got enough money.
I'm pretty happy.
Why don't you wish for world peace? Damn, man. Instead of wishing for me to have a fade. I mean, you could have solved a lot more than just handling me.
Will, are you world peace, guy? Are you watching TV at all? World peace, huh? I'm 67 years old. And I'm going to wish for world peace. That's like wishing for four eyes.
That's the idea of it. A minute ago, wait, Rick. First of all, I started this call mad at you because you're being rude. Honestly, you're being rude talking about things. But here's the deal. You want to tell me that it's realistic for you to wish me to wake up black with an earring and a fade, but it's that's not unrealistic for your genie bottle. But what is completely out of bounds for you to have four eyes?
No, I would take some money. I'm lying.
And the money too. See, you're all messed up every which way, Rick. And yes, I think if you turn on the television right now, it might impress upon you. Yes, it might be nice to wish for world peace. All right, I feel like this conversation's gone haywire. This isn't your last chance to call in. It's not. So that's a fact. So maybe we'll talk again. Thanks, Rick.
Capital One knows life doesn't alert you about your credit card. That's why we created Eno, the Capital One assistant that looks out for surprise credit card charges like overtipping, duplicate charges, or potential fraud, then sends an alert to your phone and helps if you need to fix them. Another way Capital One is watching out for your money when you're not. Capital One, what's in your wallet? See CapitalOne.com for details.
Geico gets you access to licensed agents 24/7, which means that Geico is always there for you. If only everyone was always there for you. Like your mom, when you fill out really, really important paperwork on the first day of a new job.
Name, check. Birthday, Social Security, is that a thing? Hey, mom, what is my Social Security number? Mom? Okay, let's guess. 0017. Oh, Gemini. Hashtag done.
Geico, always there for you with savings and 24/7 access to licensed agents.
Hey, you missing baseball? Tune in Sunday night for a Major League Baseball Classic, Game 7 of the 2016 World Series between the Cubs and Indians, presented by Progressive Insurance. Coverage begins at 8 p.m. Eastern Time on ESPN Radio and the ESPN app. Coming up in about 10 minutes on the Will Cain Show, I want to talk to you about action, what action looks like, what it's looked like over the last 5 years, what it's looked like over the last few months. We're giving lip service to the world needs action while ignoring that action is actually taking place. That's coming up in just a minute here on the Will Cain Show on ESPN Radio. But on our phone lines now, it's ESPN Senior Major League Baseball Insider Jeff Passan. What's up, Passan?
William, how are you, sir?
I'm good. Good article on ESPN.com right now. What is separating the players and owners? You break it down. And you break it down to this, $640,000 per game. Now, I got lost in the math because I tried to read it live during my show. But break that down for me now, what that means for each team, season long, why the owners want fewer games, obviously, and the players want more.
I'm going to do a little more math on air here. Work with me, though. The players and the clubs both agree that an average baseball game, $1.67 million is paid out in salary. Now, The teams say, and the union sort of agrees, that teams generate $980,000 combined in local television revenue. If you subtract the two, you get to about $690,000, which is close to the range of $640,000 in losses that MLB says it will lose every game that is played this year. When you multiply that by a 48-game season, which is 720 games, you get $460.8 million in losses. We know for a fact that Major League Baseball is willing to lose that much money. If you go to a full prorated salary for players at 82 games, the losses accordingly for MLB times 640,000 would be $787 million. So we are talking about a difference of $326 million that is keeping baseball from coming back this year. If you divide that by 30 teams, Will, that's $10.8 million or a number four starter for every team.
That's what it was. I used your analogy that ends up being a number four starter for every team. So what you're saying, and help, forgive me because I'm going to work back through it. It's how I have to learn sometimes in my own words. They have said they want to do a 48-game schedule, the owners, with the knowledge that they're going to lose $690,000 to $640,000 per game. So that's how you got to a number.
That's what their estimate is. That may not end up being true, Will. If there are fans in the stands, it's not going to be anywhere close to that, and this whole thing is moot, and players should get paid every single cent. You can make a pretty good argument that players should make every single cent anyway, if not only because they're A, the game, and B, taking a greater risk going out in public, traveling, et cetera, because of coronavirus. But if there are any fans in the stands this year and baseball players do not get paid in full, that's a problem.
Any fans, though, Jeff? Like, what if it's only 25% capacity? That's a lot of revenue loss for the owners.
And owners are at the point now where they have acknowledged that they're going to lose money this year. They've been gaining money for years. The franchise values have gone up 300% over, I think, the last 10 years. Paul Hambakidis from GetUp sent that along. I mean, the franchise values have spiked. The equity values have spiked. If they take some losses this year, which is a crazy year for everybody involved, I think it would be understandable.
So, I understand the point that you're making. You said they have showed their willingness to lose. It was a lot of numbers flying around. Was it $400-something million this year because of, or $300 million this year?
On game day revenue alone, $460.8 million is the exact.
Because they've said we'll do a 48-game schedule at prorated salaries, mm-hmm. knowing they'd lose that much per game, and said, okay, we'll do 48. So you said,
correct.
Okay, we know you're willing to lose that much. So you're saying we're fighting over the difference between the number of games that the players want, or the 82 games, and the number that the owners have said they're willing to lose. I think the counterargument, I think you talk about this in your column, is at some point, though, the owners have lost a lot already. I'm not saying it's a cheap trick, but when you reduce it to just, this much, it's like you keep layering on this much to a pile of losses already.
Totally. And it will, if there were some sort of socialization of gains as well, then I would understand that argument. But I think what the players say, that clubs privatize gains and social, and are trying to socialize losses, is a very reasonable argument by them to make. If the clubs are gaining that much year over year in equity and franchise value and just sheer raw profit, and that does not go back to the players, then why should the players take losses when the owners are?
Listen, I don't hate that argument. Okay, I've had that with several people. I think that the risk of ownership is the reaping the benefits of the upside and the risks of the downside. I don't hate that argument, but I do think the players benefit when profits go up because salaries go up. It may not be directly tied to the growth rate of whatever equity values in the franchise or in the margins, but it does go up.
Well, I'm going to put you on the spot here. As those franchise values have gone up 300%, what percentage do you think player salaries have gone up?
Over what time frame is the 300% growth?
I think 10 years.
Okay. What do I think player salaries have done over the last 10 years?
Yeah, what percentage?
150%?
40%.
So a guy making, what, $5 million 10 years ago is now making $8 million?
Seven, if we're going to do the math correctly. And I know you're a math guy, so you want to do the math correctly. But the point is, you don't have to dunk on me
between $1 million there.
I do have to dunk on you.
Don't be
a
Rick,
Passan.
Don't be a Rick. Just because you're pro labor, I'm pro management. I mean, we'll draw our lines here. I mean,
you know what? I've been accused of being pro management myself. So,
well, just because there's somebody willing to call, let me tell you something, Jeff. A lesson I've learned in life: just because somebody's ready to call you something doesn't make you it. I promise you that.
Listen, I understand that completely, and. I've tried to be, Will? I've tried to be pro-baseball.
That's what the column today was.
It was essentially saying, hey, guys, this is absurd. Look at what the country looks like right now between the pandemic, between the civil unrest over racial injustice. Among all of these things that are going on right now, you're going to fight over money. That's really what it's going to be.
I know, but that's an indictment of both sides in my mind. It really is. And let me,
which is exactly what I was saying. Well, I agree with you on that, man.
That's what I want to say.
No
Listen,
doubt.
I'm giving you a hard time because I like you mostly. And, but I mean, I do think all of us have biases.
Speak for yourself.
I do think all of us have biases in our life, but I think you are a fair person trying to arrive at truth. I do believe that about you. So I'm not, I was playing with you, not actually criticizing you earlier.
You can criticize me too. I'm okay with that.
I believe that's probably true. You are okay with that. Last thing though, on this, the management side, the owner side would be like, look, okay, you've bled me enough. I'm not going to lose this much. It's always the owner prerogative to stop losing money. Is any threat like that real? Like the owner's like, no, I'm just not going to lose anymore. I'm done losing. We won't play baseball.
Yeah, well, we will play baseball, Will. The whole point of this is we will play baseball. It'll just be in a 48-game season, which is kind of a joke. It will be without expanded playoffs, which players proposed in their last proposal, which, by the way, it was not a good proposal. It was nothing that was going to be accepted by the owners, but they at least showed a willingness to expand the playoffs to 14 teams, which is more money in the pockets of the owners. In the end, though, yeah, we would have a 48-game season, and we would probably have a grievance from the Players Association, and who knows where that would go. I do, though, think that there's going to be baseball. I think the resolution's going to come fairly soon because I think everybody involved recognizes that baseball screwed up already by missing its opportunity to come back before every sport and have an enormous lead on that comeback. And at this point, we're talking weeks before the NBA, as opposed to a couple of months potentially.
Mm-hmm. I'm also, by the way, I'm also not pro management. I didn't like that description of me either. I am pro risk takers.
What are you?
I am pro risk takers,
right?
What's that?
Yeah. Well, if you're okay, so I'm glad you say that. If you're pro risk takers, then shouldn't the owners, who are the ones taking the risk here, who are the ones who have used the equity that they have in franchises to leverage it into other investments, be the ones bearing the brunt of that risk?
I have said, and I said in this call with you, I do believe the best argument is, I don't like the privatized gains, socialized losses type argument because it's got too many loaded words in there. But this is the nature of entrepreneurialism. This is the nature of risk. You have to be willing to take the losses just like you do the gains. I think that type of accountability, agency, and ownership speaks to me. These are your losses too. I understand the owners being like, enough is enough at some point. I'm going to stop losing.
Yep.
I think that's the most compelling argument, Jeff. All right, man, I'm up against my commercial break. Fun conversation.
Always, Will. Take care, pal.
Okay, see you, man. ESPN Senior Major League Baseball Insider Jeff Passan here on the Will Cain Show. Let's talk about what actions have been taken, what progress has been made. Let's open the conversation back up, 888-729-3776. It's the Will Cain Show on ESPN Radio.
It could be a routine drive to pick up the kids after school or an epic road trip across the country. No matter where your travels take you, we know those miles count. We're Marathon. We have over 5,700 stations across our great nation. Our people are working hard every day to provide you with quality top-tier gasoline to improve engine performance and fuel your life. Marathon, fueling the American spirit.
I think the only way to accomplish something is to not only recognize where you want to go, but where you are. I think the only way to really get something done is to see what you've already done. A lot of lip service given to we need action. What actions have been taken? It's the Will Cain Show on ESPN Radio, presented by Progressive Insurance. Since Drew Brees said what he said, and since Drew Brees issued his apology, there have been many on ESPN airwaves, on ESPN websites, writing, no, we don't need words now. We need action. I find that curious in two ways. Number one, Drew Brees was, if anything, a man of action, but his actions didn't protect him from the requirement that he utter the right words, just the right words. It didn't matter that Drew Brees gave away $5 million in March for 10,000 meals to be delivered a day. in Louisiana through the coronavirus pandemic. It didn't matter that his Dream Foundation had donated over $35 million over its lifespan, not just for cancer research and patients, but for the rebuilding of athletic and educational facilities and contributions through Habitat through Humanity to rebuild homes in Louisiana after Hurricane Katrina. Those actions meant nothing, nothing to those that would drag Drew Brees for not towing just the exact right line. So I do find it curious when I listen to people say it is now time for action. Action? Action is what is ignored when people don't say things that you agree with. What more, action ignores what's already been done, not just on charitable contributions, helping people of color through difficult educational situations and poverty situations, but on the issue of police brutality. I thought about this morning when on Get Up, Mike Greenberg laid out what comes next. Listen.
It felt to me as I was watching it as though they were demanding action. It is one thing to say the right things, and it is another thing to actually do meaningful things. Now, I do not want to shortchange the fact that many teams in the National Football League have taken meaningful action financially and beyond that in the 4 or 5 years that we have been talking about here. But it sounds to me like these players are saying once and for all, people need to start doing stuff. The time for talking about it is over. The time to actually start doing things has arrived.
So, was Drew Brees not doing things? What I'm saying, and I'm not attacking Mike Greenberg nor anybody else, but if we're going to demand action as though that is what's needed, let's be real about what people have done. Because what they're being punished on is not the lack of action, but the words they have uttered that didn't quite satisfy everybody's crossed T and dotted I. What more, on the issue specifically of police brutality, let's talk about what action has been taken. Because we're drawing a picture of society that I'm not sure we fully understand the reality of. Of course, we're not reaching perfection. George Floyd is obviously exhibit A on that fact. No one has suggested we have arrived at perfection, that racism has been eradicated, that police brutality is a thing of the past. But what kind of actions and what kind of results have occurred? I think you would be forgiven if you had no idea that the numbers looked like this. This is the number of killings by law enforcement since 2015. Over the last decade, killings by law enforcement, armed or unarmed, justified or unjustified, killings altogether peaked at 849. In 2016, they dropped to 200. In 2017, they went down again to 138. In 2018, the number went back up to 402, still half of what had taken place in 2015. In 2019, another drop, back down to 139. Over a five-year span, you're down from 849 to 139. And what has happened so far through the year 2020? 21, law enforcement killings. I think those numbers are important to illustrate where we are. Have actions been taken? I think they have. Have we arrived at perfection? Of course we have not. Do we still have work to do? Of course we do. Is racism at large still an issue in the United States of America? Of course it is. And is police brutality still something to be worked on? Of course it is. But I don't think it's accurate nor fair to crucify Drew Brees for his words and then ignore his actions, all while saying what we need is action. And I don't think it's accurate, nor is it fair to pretend like action is what's been missing, when numbers have not just been halved, not just been reduced by three quarters, but reduced by 70, 80, 90%. Actions have been taken and progress has been made, and let us hope we stay on that path, because it seems to be, at least according to these numbers, as though we're headed to a better place. I'll hear from you, 888-729-3776. Open forum next on The Will Cain Show on ESPN Radio or the ESPN app.
Geico has the insurance industry-leading app that lets you manage your policy anytime, anywhere, which means that Geico is always there for you. If only everyone was always there for you. Like animal control, when you're cornered in your garage by an angry possum.
Hi, me again. You guys said you would be here about an hour ago, and I think the possum is starting to get angry. Listen, I thought if I fed it, it would go away, but now it is ripping holes in the drywall and making some sort of nest. Just call me back.
Geico, always there for you with savings and the industry-leading mobile app.
Coming up in about 15 minutes, Samuel Acho is going to join the Will Cain Show on ESPN Radio, presented by Progressive Insurance. This is Shower Sessions, half interview, half concert, all from the shower. Watch new music videos and exclusive interviews now at youtube.com/progressive. Let's go to Bird in West Virginia on the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line. What's up, Bird?
How you doing, Will?
I'm good.
Good. I'm glad to hear it. Hey, I've been listening for a couple of days, and I'm just trying to understand exactly what Drew Brees said that was so terrible. He was asked a question, and he gave his answer, how he felt, and then explained his answer by saying that both of his grandfathers served in the war and that the flag means a lot to him. He's entitled to that just like anybody else is entitled to their opinion.
Mm-hmm. Let me see if I – this is what I think, Bird, okay? I agree with you. I think what upset all of his teammates and players, and I guess everybody in the sports world, is he said that he'll never agree with kneeling.
Right.
So it wasn't just that he feels these honorable things about it, but that he won't agree with kneeling and sees it as an act of disrespect.
Exactly.
But here's the thing I would say in response to that. If he sees it as a symbol of pride and he sees all of that historical stuff and he's not wrong in what he sees in that, if he sees all that, then of course he would think it is an act of pride to stand up or respect, and he would agree with standing up and then therefore disagree with kneeling. And so it's, to me, what's odd is it's as though those who are mad at Drew Brees only want him to see the negative that they see in the flag.
Right. And the flag is the reason that they are able to protest, kneel, and he is also able to stand and salute the flag in his own way, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's what the flag represents, is the freedom in this country.
What people need to do, the action
people need to do, mm-hmm. is start treating people like human beings. That cop in Minneapolis just needs to be glad that I'm not the guy that hands down his punishment or sentence, because
right.
it would end the same way. I just believe in an eye for an eye. So,
yeah. I hear you, Bird. I appreciate the call. There's just such a disconnect because, you know, Pat and I even yelling at each other during the commercial breaks about this. Like, okay, this moment in time in front of this symbol, this is when the protest will take place. This is when I choose to communicate this message. Why then? Why now? Well, because there's a lot of eyes on it. That's a time when everybody will see it. But why at that? There's a lot of eyes on a game. So why that particular moment? And Kaepernick originally said it's because it's tied up in the fact that America is a racist nation. I believe if we go back and find Kaepernick's quote, he said exactly something like that. So he and anyone who sees that says they are seeing America's shortcomings and failings in that moment, in that time, and that's for the moment of the protest. But Brees sees the best, not just the aspirational, but the accomplishments in America in that time. And I fully recognize this is all divorced from the underlying issues. To me, that's a sad thing. Others think that's an accusatory thing. But I mean, literally, Pat and I just yelled at each other, and I said, if more than 50% of the nation feels this way, maybe the communication isn't being... I mean, what are you going to do? We're going to accuse 50% of people being ignorant? 50% plus being racist? 50% plus being willfully ignorant? Or maybe is it the communication mechanism is failing? Is there such thing as good and bad communication? If there is, then we might have to consider that. Adam, in Baltimore, you're on the Will Cain Show.
Will. Hey, Will, what's going on, man? Love the show.
Thank you.
I think that's a lot of the problem. I'm a Caucasian person myself, so my grandfather was a a Baltimore City cop for 35 years. He, you know, I was brought up. I mean, I hear a lot of, you know, white privilege. And look, I have no idea what it feels like to be in a black man's shoes. I have no idea. So, but I think that we all need to be able to say what we want to say without, you know, offending people and offending, because that's the only way we're going to get through this is through, like you were just saying, communication. Like when my grandfather, after the Freddie Gray incident, he was telling me, not why black men are targeted, but that this, at least this is how conversations need to go without offending people. Over 70% of all incarcerated people in our country are African American. If you take out drugs, 55% is violent crimes by African Americans. So it's something we need to talk about. We need to sit down, not be afraid to say these things. You know, like when I said that's not racist. That's just, you know, we need to stop denying.
You know what? I literally started looking at my phone during this. What are you quoting stats to me on crime rates?
I'm just talking about from a cop's point of view. Why? And like what the officer did was just reprehensible. It was one of the most disgusting things I've ever seen.
Yeah, I got it, Adam. I appreciate the call. Listen. I got it. I talked about it on Monday. Listen, whenever you're talking about the killing of people in this country, you have to ask yourself, what role does racism play? It is true that there are per capita, not gross numbers, per capita, more African Americans killed by police officers than there are whites. Per capita. You know what that means? Adjusting for the size of population. But it does then have to be readjusted for crime rate. Where are crimes taking place and who, by whom? Because you're going to have more police interactions. And then the numbers are going to go back up. And the data, and I did this on Monday, the data shows that it's not disproportionate when it comes to killings. We don't want any killings, black or white. We don't want that. That's a failure. We want to reduce failures as low as possible. I got distracted during Adam's call because I started reading tweets, which was stupid of me. But, you know, the data does matter because that's how you address a problem. That's how you address reality. Like, I don't know. I started reading this guy on Twitter, Nephew Ruckus. I don't even know why I'm giving you the attention. But like, everybody I know can't stand Will Cain, but I always defend him. But I can't after today. Because of what? Because I pointed out that over the last 5 years, the killing of unarmed people in the country has gone down. Because I dealt in facts and data. Because I recognize reality. And you can't get solutions without that. Yeah, I've been listening. Here's another one. Aaron. I've been listening to you for the past few days. And just because you donate money doesn't mean you can say or do whatever you want. Example, if I donate to LGBTQ causes, it doesn't mean I can disrespect them. Do what I want? He said it makes me sound elitist. Because Drew Brees does stuff. You know what it makes me sound like? You know what it makes you sound like? People that tweet are lazy and sit on their ass while Drew Brees performs actions that make people's lives better.
Thank you for listening to the Will Cain Podcast. You can listen to the Will Cain Show live weekdays at 3 Eastern on ESPN Radio and on the ESPN app. The Will Cain Podcast.